It's time to focus on what drives e-commerce results. It's time for Browse Basket Buy.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Browse Basket Buy, the podcast slash webinar series that knows there's a big difference between talking about the merchandise and the merchandise. Very big difference indeed. With me today, very excitingly, I have to talk about merchandising. I have Anna Wally. Hello, Anna.
Hello. Hi. Nice to be with you, Dan.
Excellent. Good. And what I like to do at the beginning, just to stop me from making an absolute hash of your background and what you've done before, please tell everybody about yourself and why we should listen to you about the world of merchandising.
Okay, just wanted to say thanks for having me on here, Dan. So I'm Anna. I spent over 20 years working in merchandising across high street, fast fashion and luxury for some well-known brands like Matalan, Jaeger and Pretty Little Thing. And then for the last 5 years, I've founded my own consultancy and I'm in lots of different businesses looking at their merchandising and helping them with their merchandising capability and delivery. And I love merchandising. I love merchandising and what it can deliver and how you can turn data into tangible outcomes and tell a story with the data. So I'm a bit of a data geek with that. So that's about me.
Awesome. Awesome. You sound like just the person we're looking for, because I think the theme of this is going to be merchandising is more important than you think. So let's get stuck in. Most retailers think merchandising is just arranging products to look nice. I mean, it is that, but it's other things as well. What is it actually about, and what is the price of getting it wrong?
Yeah, so I just want to address that first. Merchandising is often really understood and people think it is about that visual impact. And that, as you say, is visual merchandising, can't get my words out. And that is really important. And that's about presentation and storytelling of product, which we all value when we walk past the product, it makes an impact. But I do retail merchandising, and that is all about getting your range and your product right. So think about your product range, your product assortment, your sales planning, your stock management, and your price strategy. People sometimes refer to it as the five rights of merchandising. So the right product in the right place, at the right price, at the right time, and in the right quantity. And all of that, the reason it's so important is you're translating that into profit. So if the strategy is about driving growth in a certain avenue, you'll translate that into what it means for the product and how you can get the most profit from that. So it's in the planning, and then when you've done the planning, it's about the trading, and it's so important. And if you think about some really stark examples of where it might go wrong, you might say, oh, I've got this beautiful range, it's all the right price and everything like that, but actually it's a lightweight product going into winter, it's not going to work. Or you've got this gorgeous range of, say, like tops and knitwear, but you don't have any bottoms, or you don't have the right ratio for it to work. It's not a cohesive range. You're not going to deliver the profit that you need. So it's about a balancing act, really, and it is really important.
So yeah, more than just what products look like, how they're displayed, but what those products are, how many of each you need, all those kind of things really, really matter. Yeah. As well. And don't order any thin summer outfits in winter, that kind of thing.
Yeah, or too much short sleeve. Yeah, all of that. It's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And so everyone talks about knowing the customer. And obviously a lot of what you're talking about there is about understanding for a retailer, for an e-commerce brand, who their customer is. So how do you actually use that knowledge to decide which products to stock without just taking a bit of a punt or guessing?
Well, maybe at the start you're taking a punt because you're envisaging that customer. But really, once you've got past that, you'll have a lot of data at your disposal, and you can use that data to really build up a picture of what your customer is. And rather than say, she's 40 plus, really understand what that customer is. What's she looking for her product? How is she going to interact with you? And what solution are you providing an answer for? So we sort of years ago, we used to have a board in the room when we were picking products, and on there would be all about our customer, her name, her age, how much you wanted to spend on the product, what she did and how she used the product. And we'd literally be holding up the product and thinking, right, we love this product. it doesn't fit our customer, it's not right. So you really have to have that sort of focus on who your customer is. And it, as I said at the beginning, you'll have a lot of data. So if you think about what that data is telling you, it's not going to lie. Purchases don't lie. If she or they are consistently buying this type of product, that is the product that's right for you and in your range. And sometimes we can sort of forget that. And really, that's the most important thing. So you just need to dig a little bit deeper, though. So say, as an example, you might say, oh, last year we took this much money on occasion wear. Our customer likes occasion wear. But actually, if you dig into that data a little bit further, you'll see that that money was made on markdown profit, that it was heavily distressed or promoted, and actually it wasn't very profitable. And although everything was marked down, there was a few products that weren't quite as bad, and those pieces were actually quite versatile. So we've dug into the data, we've understood what type of product worked and the rest of it sort of didn't really work. And actually we step back this year and say, our customer does want some occasion wear, but it wants to be a versatile piece that can be worn in multiple ways. And perhaps we only need a few items, and that money can be taken or spent on another product that's more appropriate. So do look at the data, but dig into it and don't sort of tell yourself, oh, you know, we always take this much money. Look at how profitable it is and really sort of dig in and ask yourself, why she's using the product, or what solution does it provide the answer for. So if you don't know what the answer is, maybe it's not the right product for you.
Yeah, so looking beyond just the headline sales figure into what's actually profitable and what sort of things make it a sustainable business for you. In terms of those, just sort of a side question, in terms of those kind of softer things, because obviously, as you say, you can pick out some very solid things like demographics and things like that. How do you think about those kind of softer elements of kind of what your customer is like, what their preferences are? How do you go about sort of putting those into a reasonable way of understanding it as you're planning your products?
I think it depends what it is. So if you're planning, I don't know, a gifting range, let's say, and you know, we want to sell gifts. So okay, let's think about how our customer, what money are they going to spend on a gift? Are they someone that wants to spend sort of £20 gift, £50 gift, £100 gift? Are they buying it for a special occasion gift or just a regular gift? And that's sort of softer data, but will inform you about the choices that you're going to make and how that product might be presented. And you'll get to know your customer. You can test things, try them out, see what the results are, and move forward. You know, there's always that element of pushing. You shouldn't always look backwards to see what the results were. You've got to try some new things. But I think you can ask your customer, but the data doesn't lie when you come back and see those results. So use that data and imagine how she's going to use the product and move it into a softer way.
Yeah, and that sort of brings us on nicely, actually, talking about there's some things you need to try and some things which are your bread and butter, to this idea of the 80-20 principle, which comes up a lot. So what does it actually look like in practice when it comes to merchandising, and what are retailers perhaps getting wrong about it when it comes to the 80-20?
I would say, so that 80-20 rule, the Pareto rule that we all know, so that's 20% of your effort and you'll get a disproportionate result, so 80%. So first of all, are you looking at it? I would definitely say that is something that you need to look at. And to do that, you're going to rank your sales by product and say, right, the top 20%, how much money do they take? Or also ask the question, how much profit do those take? So you've got 500 lines, it's the top 100. It's always a great thing to step back and see how much money your top seller took. And then at the bottom, low sales or no sales is also interesting. So first of all, do the exercise and you'll find that you've got a theme in that sort of top 20 product. It's your heartland product or core product. It's your sort of staple bread and butter, for want of a better expression. And that's why it's really important, because you'll get a view of what that means for your customer. So is it all, it might be different types of product, but the colour navy might come up as a really prominent theme in there. So it's not just about the product, it's what themes are you getting from that. It's all a certain price point, which I'll come on to in a moment, or there's something about it. If you don't get that sort of disproportionate view and it's fairly flat, 20% taking about 30% of the sales, something's probably a little bit off. You might have duplication in the range. It might be because you've had out of stocks. You might just be buying everything flat and you're not maximizing what could work. And you're focusing your effort a little bit on everything. So that's probably also telling you something. But where I think retailers are getting it wrong is they're perhaps not looking at it. You've got to look at it and see what that data is telling you. It's a great way to step back and get a result. Another way to do that is to step back and get a view of good, better, best. And this is a really common way to look at product in retail. So you've got your good, sort of maybe a value product, and that's sort of price branded as appropriate for an entry level product or good. You've got your better, so that might be to do with a different, more detailed styling or fabrication or sort of something a bit more about the product, and that's in your better bracket. It's not necessarily one price point, there might be a few price points in there. And then your best product, and you can step back and look at the shape of the range. So it's, you can do it across different products, so you can do it for tops, say. But within tops, your better might be, 60 to £89. Let's say that's your better. If you're looking at another product category, that's going to be completely different, say outerwear. So you can't say that price bracket, but you can step back and say your better selection. And once you know what that looks like for your customer, you can use it to step back and just ask yourself, right, I've put this range together. I'm going to send it out. Does it fit that shape? Have we got the majority in better, a lot in good, and a little bit in best? Is that where I am? And if it's not, if you sat there and we've put all those exciting things in, all the sort of really exciting best stuff in, maybe it's not balanced overall, and you need to step back and be a little bit ruthless. If you've got, you might be changing your strategy, so you might want to shift it a bit. But if you've got too much in the best, they're not buying your better. And that's where if your brand is in that heartland, that's where you need to have your product. If you've grown your good too much, you're going to have to sell a lot more here to make the same cash that you were doing over here. So it's a great way to step back and have a look at it and take a view. So I really like those aspects, and really challenge yourself. Have I committed to my core or heartland product? Have I got enough to drive the sales where I need to? And if not, you've got to be a little bit ruthless and make it fit. Otherwise, you're never going to take the money. So in answer to your question, where do I think it goes wrong? I don't think people look at it enough and really challenge themselves with that.
Yeah, I like the idea of an architect, or as you say, a structure to it, which it's allowing you to work within that and figure out where you can find growth and where you can take things forward.
And it's not static. You know, you might decide you've had some success in another sort of section. You might want to develop that further, but it has to sort of stack up afterwards and take the same money. So yeah, it's a really good way to look at your range. I really like it.
Yeah, I remember we had an example. We worked with a US Polo Association at one point, and they sell absolutely masses of plain, you know, white polo shirts. Absolutely, that's their core, as you say, their core product, the thing they sell loads of. And then what they're doing is they're always trying other things, which are kind of similar, that people would also buy in a similar style. But they always come back to, well, what we really sell all the time is our, you know, we never discount them. We always just sell them is our plain coloured polo shirt, our core product.
Yeah. You've got, and they'll be the top 20% that's taking 80% of the money, and that is so important. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in a world where everyone stocks similar stuff, how do you actually offer something different that customers will pay for?
I think sometimes, I'm going to answer this in a slightly different way. I think sometimes we get too obsessed with what our competitors are doing. Yeah. We should observe what our competitors are doing. We should know what they're doing. We should be mindful of it. But I think we need to focus on what we're doing. And I'm going to use a non-clothing example, because I feel like I've used a lot of clothing examples. But, you know, a lot of people sell candles. That's, you know, there's loads. They're everywhere. But if we stop and think, my brand and my candle within my brand is, it's got a really universal scent. The packaging is really on point, and when it's delivered, the packaging is also really beautiful, and it makes for a great gift. The price is right, and I love it as a self gift, and I love it to give it to people. I've really honed in on what I do really well, and I've not bothered about what anyone else is doing. I've really focused on that. And I think sometimes it's a little bit like, oh, what do we need to be doing that? Do we focus on what you do and do it really well and make it sure it sits within your brand? It doesn't mean to say you're only going to do that. You know, we've talked about other sort of growing areas before, but once you've got your core product, the customers will come to you. They'll know you for it and they'll trust you. And once that trust has built up, you can look at other product areas as well that fits within that brand. And, you know, going back to clothing, maybe your clothing, maybe they really trust you. Now they're going to trust you with accessories or footwear or something else. Or you go and say, right, I'm going to do a completely different proposition. My customers absolutely trust the brand. And within that, we think we can go for a new proposition within homeware or something different. But it's got to be true to the brand. And I think sometimes we get a little bit focused on what everyone else is doing. Do your product really well, and the customers will come to you. They'll know you for it and they'll want to come back. And you've got that anchor product there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I always go back to the same retailers, for I know what they do. My tip, if you're a candle brand, maybe try little mini fire extinguishers. Might be good just in case. I'm just saying.
Maybe that's you. I don't know.
Maybe. Safety first is all I'm thinking. We talked about the data and sort of the numbers behind. So you've got this year, you're trying to plan, you know, as a retailer, the exciting stuff is to think about what products are going to sell, how are we going to expand the range, what other things can we do? But what's really important, and this is a recurring theme in Browns Basket Buy, is coming back to those numbers, those metrics, those things underlying what's going on. So what data tells you whether your merchandising decisions are working before you show up in the quarterly numbers and the profit?
Those numbers will start a lot earlier in the planning. So, and you've done that planning and you've stepped back and you've looked at your 80-20, you've looked at your good, better, best, and you're there. Great. Now we've moved into the trading. So the numbers are there in terms of the planning, but moving forward into the trading, I'm going to try and keep it to three measures.
Okay.
Going to really try. Yeah. So your sales, obviously everyone looks at sales. That revenue is really important. Profit. Don't forget it. And your stock. Your stock is going to indicate where you've got problems. That's my three measures. I'm going to sneak in a fourth with returns.
You can have as many as you like. You don't.
I'm trying to keep it. There are loads, but I think, you know, that's going to tell you that 80-20 rule. That's going to tell you most. But I'm putting returns in there because it's a really important factor. And when you're looking at your sales, if you're ignoring your returns, it's a false measure. So those are the measures. And then we think about the metrics. So within that, we've got, I'll try and keep to three again, sell through. Rate of sale and cover. I would say that those are three really strong ones. If I was going to sneak in a fourth, I'd say markdown ratio as a fourth. But my three things: sales, profit, and stock, and returns. Sell through, rate of sale, and cover. And with those, you can do an absolute. You can tell quite a lot, and then look at your top line, and go down to channel. So let's have a chat about sell through as an example. Some retailers love sell through, some like rate of sale, and it's going to depend on where you sit within that. So earlier in my career, I started with a retailer that was a value retailer, very much focused on rate of sale, and then I went to luxury and I was like, oh, it's a bit slower. Mm-hmm. And sell through becomes important. So let's think about sell through. You've got you might expect to have sold a certain amount and sold through at a certain point in time. If you haven't, you might have a problem. You might be selling faster, in which case you want to repeat, or slower. So you've got a measure and you can compare other products within that. And that's great. There are some exceptions. Maybe you just, frankly, you bought far too much of that product. It's a great product, but you just bought far too much. Or it's a core product and it's flowing stock. And again, it's making the numbers not necessarily read correctly, or it's had an amazing sell through and everyone's, you know, seen about it. But frankly, you bought a small amount, so it's not a big deal. Rate of sale. I really like when I'm stepping down into sort of that channel detail to think what's fast, or say if you've got an overall rate of sale, that's okay. But then you're looking at your different channels and you can really see the difference very quickly about what's working where. So those are great metrics to use. Cover, another one, it's fantastic. You can definitely look at your spot cover. So I sold 10 last week. I've got 100 units. I'm sitting on 10 weeks worth of stock. If you've got a forward view, even better, because it's about what you're projecting forward. So if I'm going to sell 100 next week, I've actually only got 1 week's cover. So that's a really good metric to compare and see where your issues are. So we've got this data, we're looking at it. What does it mean? What is it telling us? Where is it informing us that there's problems or areas that we need to look at? Where are the exceptions? And then you can act on them and move forward. But I would really say, look at that data. What's it telling you and what can you do about it? It's all very well looking at the numbers, but if you're not going to actually act on it, it's a bit wasted, really.
Yeah. And this, again, it's a theme of Browse Basket Buy that keeps coming up. The operational side of the business is so important, and being on top of the numbers and being on top of exactly what's going on so you can understand, as you say, how much stock do we have? How long is that going to last us? Is something selling at the rate we thought it was going to? Why is that? Was it the wrong product choice? There's not much you can do about it, really, other than things like fiddling with the price, shout out for my day job at Revlifter, and promotions and using that to adjust price. But yeah, anyway, you were gonna.
You're absolutely right. You can adjust the price, but also you're not going to stop there with the range that you are today. You've got other ranges coming forward. Are you using that knowledge that you've gained, the knowledge there? If something doesn't work, that is so, you get so much insight from that. Why didn't it work? What are we doing? What have we got coming down the line that might be the same or not the same? You know, I think too much we live in the moment. We've got to step back and think, how is this going to inform other decisions? And I think, I actually think that maybe this is another podcast, but thinking about how you get to look at that data and the processes behind that, you know, is it real time? Is there a lag and then you've got a problem? Is it a repeatable way to look at your data? Is it set up in a way that you can look at the data in an insightful way so that you can see the exceptions quickly and tackle what you need to? So that whole process around how you look at the data is so important, and that so many businesses, it's not slick as it needs to be. And then you're spending time drudging through the data and you're not instantly getting there and moving forward. So I'm sure you've got something to say about that, but that is a problem in itself.
Yeah, no, it's something that comes up a lot, I think, in the operational side is that idea of people are so in the moment when it comes to your operation of your e-commerce business. Are you learning from what's going on? Are you thinking about what that is teaching you? What is telling you about future directions? This comes up a lot for us with coming up to Q4, to peak. The great advantage of peak, as far as we're concerned, is you get more traffic and more conversions than you do, most businesses do, on the other time of year. So this is the time to try things and learn from them and take that knowledge and use it the rest of the year when you'll have a much smaller amount of data to work with.
So much learning. And you need to do it so quickly now as well, isn't it? You know, it's not like, you know, a day here is like a week before. It's so critical. You need to be on it and use that real-time data. But yeah, you can learn so much. Why has this sold well?
Yeah.
Why hasn't this sold? You know, we all thought it was great. There must be a reason for it. Yeah. So what is that reason? I think it's so important.
I imagine that conversation happens so much in retail. We all thought this was going to be a huge seller, and it isn't. What happened?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course it is. I mean, if we could all, if anybody could sit there and perfectly, you know, crystal ball do it, we'd be getting that person to do everything. So you are going to have surprises.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then it's how you respond to them and what you do with that knowledge.
Yeah.
So this is all great, great information. What we like to do on Browse Basket Buy is leave everybody with one practical takeaway, one thing that people, if you give people one thing to go and do right now that would help them.
Oh, I'm going to have to distill it to one thing. Yeah. I can't just say bestsellers.
You're having a fan track record on this of having the limited number of things. So you can have more than one if you want, but just something or a few things that people can go away.
I'm going to try and limit it to two things. So we've just talked about one of them. I would say, look at your data. Don't wait. If you've got a problem, it's not going to get better. Years of experience, it never gets better. Deal with it instantly. So to do that, you need to look at your data, understand what it's saying, what actions can you take, and then take them. Don't just, you know, we're all sat in a room, we've talked about it, but actually nobody's taken the action. You've got to make the action happen. And I would say say you're doing all that. If I would say one sort of practical thing to take away today is is go away and look at your worst sellers. Look at where your stock is piling up, because that is a real bottleneck. If you have a missed sale, you've had a missed sale and it's really frustrating and nobody wants that. I'm absolutely saying it, you know, nobody wants that. I know that. If you've got stock that's building up, it is blocking your cash flow. It is going to be something that you might have to mark down in a way that you don't want to, and in a way that's distressing and might impact your brand. And it's blocking you from spending money on things that you want to spend on and get more profit into the business. So I would say go away and look at what's not working. What stock are you sitting on that's not moving, and take that action would be more so than what's working. It's exciting to see what's working. Everybody chases what's working. Are we actually spending that time looking at what's blocking up your cash flow and not working? Take the action.
Yeah, absolutely. Good advice.
It was one thing.
Oh, yes. Yeah, nice and bold. Nice and bold, though. Yeah, just get on with it and figure out what's working. And what's
yeah, be ruthless.
Fabulous. Thank you, Anna. That was great. A whistle-stop tour through merchandising. Perhaps we'll have you back on to, spend ages going through a spreadsheet to try and... how you would do this, that would be a really interesting thing. But where can people find you? Where can they find you online?
You can find me online on annawarleyconsulting.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn. That's probably a great place to find me. But yeah, any questions, just come and ask. Merchandising is very exciting.
It is very exciting. I agree. And you have the merchandising school as well, which people can Google.
Yes, we also have the merchandising school, which you can, if you're in LinkedIn, you can find us there, or the merchandising school website as well. So you can come and find us.
Excellent. People should do exactly that and learn more about merchandising. Thank you, Anna. That was fabulous. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Hopefully see you next time.
Bye.
Browse Basket Buy is brought to you by your friends at Revlifter. Promotions work, but they damage brand and margins. Revlifter's intelligent offers drive results by using behavioural signals to target the right customers at the right time. Customers typically see 20% more conversions, 30% higher AOV, 5% more revenue, and a 10% saving on promotional costs. So stop wasting discounts on people who'd buy anyway. Try Revlifter free for 90 days and they'll handle all the heavy lifting. Visit revlifter.com to find out more. That's revlifter.com.